Hare Krishna, dear devotees, welcome back once again to our ongoing series on the glories of Srila Rupa Goswami and his beloved deity of Govindaji. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Pashtaya Bhutale, Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namane. Namaste Saraswati Deve, Gauravani Pacharine, Nivishesha Shunyavadi, Pastatyade Shatarne. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. So, today we're continuing to follow Srila Rupa Goswami's deity, Govinda Dev, or Govinda Ji, as we say these days, as he evades capture and destruction during the reign of the Mughal tyrant Aurangzeb. So far, we've followed him from Vrindavan to Radhakund, and then Kamyavan, and then Bhatara. Of course, it may seem odd that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has to run from someone. Why does Krishna have to run from someone? In Bhagavad Gita 10:34, Krishna says, Mrityu sarva harashchaham, quote, I am all devouring death. So how do we understand Govindaji's fleeing here and there? Well, really, essentially, it's a pastime to give his devotees, who are always begging for seva, a chance to serve him. If Govindaji wanted, he could vanquish Aurangzeb and his entire army in a moment's notice. He's not a statue, he's a deity, he's fully conscious. Srila Prabhupada said in a lecture in Bombay, December 4th, 1974, and I quote, Krishna is ready to talk with you. He has come. He has descended in Archa Murti to talk with you, to be visible by you. Now make yourself ready and fit to talk with Krishna. Then he will exchange conversation. Shanta Shadhaiva Videshu Vikalokyanti. This is possible. Unquote. This is possible. So, even if for some reason, you know, the marble or the stone deity breaks, say a finger or an arm or whatever, we repair him and continue to worship him or her as the deity, because we know the Lord is none different than that form. I recently saw two letters in the Vrindavan Research Institute. The first was from another one of our heroes, Jai Singh II, to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And he was telling Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that several of the murtis, or several of the deities in his kingdom, in particular in Jaipur at that time, they had become damaged. And he gave an example that, you know, one deity had a broken foot, another deity a broken finger. He mentioned another deity that the toe had come off, like that. And he wrote that the local pandits were telling him that those deities have left those forms, and that the marble or the stone forms should be thrown in a sacred river. And you see, that's what they do today in India. But Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, one of our beloved acharyas, he did not agree. In his letter, he replied, and I saw it with my own eyes, he replied to Jai Singh the Second, quote, If your son loses a finger in an accident, do you throw him away? Of course not. And does your son leave his body because of such an injury? No, he doesn't. There is no Shastric injunction that the deity should be discarded. Simply repair the deities and continue their worship with love and devotion, unquote. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur ki. Such an important instruction. And I know that we follow that in ISKCON. So those devotees who were serving Govindaji in times of happiness and distress, like we're discussing these last few weeks, they knew these things well. They understood there was no difference between the Lord and his form as the deity. They were dealing with the person, the supreme person. There's that classical, beautiful, you could say straightforward verse in Padma Purana, warning everyone and anyone not to see so-called material things invested with transcendence in a mundane way. Padma Purana, quote, "That person who considers the deity of the Supreme Lord to be dead matter, made out of stone, wood, or metal, or the spiritual master who is an associate of the Supreme Lord to be an ordinary man who is prone to die, or the Vaishnava to be coming from some particular caste, or the water which washes the feet of the pure devotee, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead to be ordinary water, although such water has the potency to destroy all evils of the age of Kali, or to consider the holy name of the Supreme Lord, or mantras dedicated to him which are able to destroy all sin, to be ordinary sounds, or to consider the Supreme Lord of all, Lord Vishnu, to be equal with the demigods, is considered to possess a hellish mentality. A person who thinks in this way is certainly a resident of hell," unquote. What a powerful verse. So we must thank Srila Prabhupada for opening our eyes to see things like that. Om Agyan Timadandasya Ginangana Shalakaya Chaksudamilitam Jainatasmaya Sigurave Namaha. I who was standing in the darkness of ignorance do offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, who has opened my eyes with the torchlight of transcendental knowledge. So the deity is a person, and thus Govindaji's quote-unquote running away from Vrindavan really just provided a chance for his devotees who had full faith in him to serve him under those circumstances. And foremost amongst them, in many ways, of course, was our hero, Shivarama Goswami. We last heard how Govindaji, along with Sri Radha and Kashishwar's deity of Gaur Govinda, they left Kamyavan for safer places. Unfortunately, they had to leave Vrindadevi behind. But as we discussed, that was her desire. You may remember how she appeared in a dream to Shivaram Goswami the night before the bullock carts were to leave for the next stop from Kamyavan to Bahatara. In that dream, she informed him that she would be leaving. And we mentioned what she said to him in that dream. And that desire of hers is confirmed actually by Baladev Bindyabhushana, the disciple of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who in his writings informs us exactly what Vrindadevi was thinking as she watched the other bullock cart with Govindaji and others depart. What was she thinking? It's a famous quote. She was thinking, quote, "I cannot leave Vrindavan. If I were to leave Vrindavan, then what would the devotees think? If I, Vrindadevi, were to leave Braj, how could the devotees have faith in Vrindavan? Krishna may come, Krishna may go, but I take a solemn promise, I shall never leave Braj," unquote. And to this day, we can go to Kamyavan and see her in a beautiful temple there in all her glory. It's actually one of the nicest darshans in Vrindavan. So this was the year 1675. Now, Govindaji's this destination of Bhatara, it was I was reading quite some distance from Kamyavan, and it took the bullock cart quite some time to reach there from Kamyavan to Bhatara. And when it arrived, Shivaram Goswami, who's always thinking about the welfare of Govindaji, as Govindaji is thinking about the welfare of Shivaram Goswami. This is love. Love is reciprocal. So Shivaram Goswami was disappointed when they arrived in Bhatara, because he immediately saw it was not a very developed place. It wasn't it wasn't a wealthy place like Kamyavan. Because in Kamyavan he could procure all kinds of goods and paraphernalia for the worship of Govindaji. But he quickly understood that in Bhatara, which was really a small village, he would have difficulty even getting basic supplies. What's more, he considered, there were no persons of royalty living there like there were previously in Kamyavan. Some of the royal family was living in Kamyavan, which meant Govindaji would not get any charity or donations. And actually the situation became critical after 2 months. So Shivaram Goswami, he traveled alone, he left alone, and he traveled many hundreds of kilometers south to Amer, which was the capital, the seat of that king, Raj Ram Singh, who had already offered so much help. And he personally related the difficulties that he was having in worshiping Govindaji in Bhatara. So Ram Singh the First, he kindly made an order, gave an order to shift the deities to a fort another distance away, which was built by his father, Jai Singh the First. And that fort later became famous as Govindagarh. And this fort, I was reading, it's where his father, Jai Singh the First, used to come and spend time after winning big battles. And it was considered very safe because it was surrounded by a dense forest. So not only giving this fort for the protection of Govindaji, Ram Singh ordered his men to build in the fort a very extravagant temple for Govindaji. Just look at these kings. These are real kings, Rajarishis. You could say Rajarishi means like a sadhu sitting on the throne. These are Rajarishis. These are real leaders. So not only did he give this fort, which was obviously very amazing fort, very protected, able to protect Govindaji. It was one of his father's favorite places of residence. But he had a beautiful temple built there. And that construction started immediately, actually. Then he also donated an entire nearby village to Govindaji, the revenue of which, he said, was to be used solely for the maintenance of Govindaji. We've heard this several times in the last few weeks, that the kings would give villages or big tracts of land, for the maintenance of the deity, to grow fruits and vegetables, and if there was water there, and so forth and so on, or to sell those products, and the money could be used for the maintenance of the deity. And then finally, Ram Singh ordered 300 of his best soldiers to accompany Shivaram Goswami back to Bhatara, with orders to then safely escort Govindaji, Radha, and the other deity, Gaur Govinda, safely to the fort, which is, as I mentioned, another great distance. So it was there, by the combined efforts of Raj Ram Singh and the Sadhu Shivaram Goswami, who actually became very close friends, I was reading, very, very close friends, that Govindadev, Radha, and Gaur Govinda were safely worshipped inside a beautiful temple, maintained by the revenue of a large village for 25 years. They stayed there for 25 years. In this long trip from Vrindavan down to Jaipur, and we're discussing really the major places they stayed, because there's others, sometimes they would stay for a few days or a week somewhere else on the journey before they reached one of these major centers. But this is where the deity stayed for 25 years. It's the longest place they stayed in their 50-year journey between Vrindavan and Jaipur. I really want to go there and see that place, that fort. And during that time, Ram Singh had to deal with a lot of, you know, opposition at home, some uprisings, you know, the citizens weren't happy with this or that, whatever, as well as, you know, troubles in other parts of his kingdom. And I was reading, he was always in anxiety that the emperor Aurangzeb might invade his kingdom and steal away Govindaji. But that never happened. And the sadhus, they give their point of view on this. The sadhus say why this never happened. They quote one famous verse, Dhammo Rakshati Rakshita. Dhammo Rakshita Rakshita. Dhammo Rakshati Rakshita. For one who protects Dharma, Dharma protects him. And Shivaram Goswami had full faith in the deity of Govindaji, as did Ram Singh. Both of them had very strong faith in Govindaji. So both were protected. Dharma Rakshati Rakshita. For one who protects Dharma, Dharma protects him. So both of these devotees, they were protected. As they protected Govinda, Govinda protected them. They were fully surrendered to that deity. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:27-47 says, Sirumat padayo kritva bahubhyam cha parashparam prapanam pahimam isha bitam mrityugra harnivat. Quote, placing his head at the feet of the deity, one should stand with folded hands before the Lord and pray, O my Lord, please protect me, who am surrendered unto you. I am most fearful in this ocean of material existence, standing as I am in the mouth of death. So we can learn from these two devotees, Raj Ram Singh and Shivaram Goswami, how to take shelter of the deity and receive their protection so that we can continue our service to Srila Prabhupada pushing on the Sankirtan movement. So unfortunately, 14 years later, in 1688, our beloved Shivaram Goswami passed away of natural causes. And unable to bear his separation, Raj Ram Singh departed the world 10 months later. What more can we say of these great men who risked everything, including their lives on many occasions, to rescue, protect, and provide for the worshipable Lord of Srila Rupa Goswami? If not for their efforts, we would not have the great privilege to go to Jaipur to this very day, see Radha Govinda standing in all their glory on the altar there with Gaur Govinda. So we're actually, I would like to say, duty bound to honor such devotees of the past. They should not be forgotten. Rather, they should be remembered, if only for our own purification. And inspired by their character and their deeds, these two devotees, if need be, and in modern times, we should be prepared to take risks also on behalf of the Lord, should such occasions arise. And then we can also be counted amongst such great souls as, you could say, what's that saying? Comrades in arms in the war against Maya. Of course, we may not have to face in our lifetime such dire circumstances, but, you know, just to push on this movement, one is inviting trouble. Because in the material world, to a greater or lesser degree, people have come here to forget Krishna. So to remind them is no easy task. So sometimes there may be risks, but we should be prepared. Hearing the lives of these devotees, we should be ready to take the risk if necessary. And then we'll be comrades in arms. I would like to think like that. As Shakespeare writes in Henry V, I think it's Act 4, "We few, we happy few, we band of brothers, for he today that sheds his blood with me shall be my brother." We few, we happy few, we band of brothers, for he today that sheds his blood with me shall be my brother. So we remember the character and the deeds of devotees in the past to be inspired in carrying on the tradition that they participated in. Had not they done what they did, maybe we wouldn't be here doing what we're doing today. So it's always very nice to remember Vaishnavas of the past, those who we know about, even those we don't know about, we can praise them. We can remember devotees of the present, and we can glorify devotees in the future. Shakala Vaishnava Padi Mora Namaskara Iti Kicho Aparada Nahuka Amara Hoy Yachan Hoyben Prabhur Jato Bhakta Vrinda Bandana Kori Shibara Charanara Vinda. One of my favorite verses from the devotee poet Devaki Nandana Das, medieval times. He writes so nicely, "I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of all Vaishnavas, praying I will not commit offenses in my attempts to please them. To all Vaishnavas who have ever been, and to all Vaishnavas who will ever be, I offer my obeisances at their lotus feet." Thank you, Devaki Nandana Prabhu. Actually, I've been so inspired by, you know, Shivaram Goswami and his exploits to save Govindaji, in his service to Govindaji. I mean, remember when Aurangzeb's army descended that fatal day in Vrindavan, he was the one who rang the bell and rallied the troops, so to speak, and encouraged everyone to go back and hide their deities, etc., etc. And along with his team, he personally rescued Govinda, Radha, or Govinda, hid them in the lake, made a plan, put to sleep all the Muslim guards with opium smoke, sent the bullock cart. I mean, these are, you know, now it's easy to listen to, but you can imagine how intense it was at that time. How indebted we are to this devotee, Shivaram Goswami, and I never heard of him before. So I got inspired, and I asked my good friend, the Sanskrit scholar, Hari Parshad from Mumbai, to compose a prana mantra for Shivaram Goswami. And I plan to say this mantra each time I go to Jaipur and have darshan of our beloved Govindaji. So here's the prana mantra for Shivaram Goswami. I don't imagine he ever had one, but he deserves. Prabhum Shri Shiva Ramyak Yam Amityur Hari Shevakam Govindarpita Pranam Tam Pranamami Puna Puna. I repeatedly pay my obeisances to the Goswami named Sri Shivaram Prabhu, who was a servant of Sri Hari till the very end of his life, and who offered all his life affairs in the service of Sri Govinda. Prabhum Sri Shiva Ramyakyam Amrityur Hari Shevakam Govindarpita Pranam Tam Pranamami Puna Puna. I repeatedly pay obeisances to the Goswami named Sri Shivarama Prabhu, who was a servant of Sri Hari to the very end of his life, and who offered all his life heirs in the service of Sri Govinda. And, you know, sometimes I daydream, if somehow we could meet these devotees on our journey back to the spiritual world, such devotees like that. Svacha prakriti tat shnigdo madhuryas tirtha burninam muni punat apam mitram ikshopas parsha kritinai. Bhagavatam says 11.7.44. O king, a saintly person is just like water because he is free from all contamination, gentle by nature, and by speaking creates a beautiful vibration like that of flowing water. Just by seeing, touching, or hearing such a saintly person, the living entity is purified, just as one is cleansed by contact with pure water. Thus, a saintly person, just like a holy place, purifies all those who contact him because he always chants the glories of the Lord. Perfect description of our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, as well. So, after the departure of Shivaram Goswami, the protection and the worship and the continued journey of Govindaji, it fell to his elder son, Krishna Chandra Goswami. Now, you may remember that his father, Shivaram Goswami, also acted as his guru and had given him a personal instruction. You remember to stay in Kamyavan and worship Rindadevi because she didn't want to leave. So Shivaram Goswami said, you know, to his elder son, you stay here and you worship her. So that simple instruction he took as his life and soul, as his very life and soul. So Krishna Chandra Goswami couldn't take over the worship of Govindaji. So that service then was taken up by his younger brother, whose name was Govindacharan Goswami. Govindacharan Goswami. So now we hear about another wonderful devotee. So Govindacharan Goswami then went to the fort, to Govindagar, where Govindaji was still being cared for during that lengthy stay of 25 years. That period had not concluded yet, so he went there and he served. It is said that Govindacharan Goswami was a master chef. And his specialty was making sweets. So that's what he did. I mean, he cooked every day for Govindaji, but he was really, really good at making sweets for the Lord. So one day, he made loglus for Govindaji and then sent them with some soldiers who were going to see the presiding king of Amber, after Ram Singh, whose name was Vijay Singh, later to be known as the great Jai Singh the Second. We're going to hear more about him a little bit today and in the final class, actually, in a few days on this great journey. Jai Singh the Second, such an amazing devotee. So at that time, he was called Vijay Singh, and he was actually a young man, 10, 11 or something like that, 12, I can't remember. But still he was seen as the king. He had his helpers, his assistants, and his ministers helping him rule the kingdom. So when our Jai Singh II tasted those luglus as a young boy, he asked for seconds. It's famous. Can I have more? Because he liked them so much. In fact, later on, he sent one of his royal chefs, Jai Singh II, sent one of his royal chefs named Maharaj Kunwar, to learn the recipe of those luglus from Govinda Charan Goswami at Govindagarh Fort. He said, you go up there, you learn that recipe, bring it back so we can have luglus here. Now, it's really interesting that those same luglus, that same recipe, are still being offered daily to Govindaji in Jaipur, every day in the Jaipur temple. And then they're sold or given to pilgrims. And I know for many of us in ISKCON, that's one of the special treats. When we go for darshan of Radha Govinda in the Jaipur temple, that big temple, there's a little corner where they're selling those luglus, same recipe. And, you know, the residents of that town, they like to buy them and then distribute pieces of those luglus to all the pilgrims who are coming. I think I've had many in my lifetime. But I didn't know the history of those luglus. It's so interesting. Now, I also, in the Institute, I was also reading that this Govinda Charan Goswami, he was always very well dressed, especially while doing puja for Govindaji on the altar. He was famous for wearing blue silk dhotis and decorating himself with various types of expensive ornaments, jewelry, while on the altar. And once some devotees asked him, they asked Govinda Charan Goswami why he wore such expensive ornaments and nice clothes by worshipping Govindaji. So Govinda Charan Goswami replied, it's a very nice reply, and I quote him, "Just as a minister who represents the king dresses up nicely before going to see the king, so I worship the king of the 14 worlds, Lord Govindadev, and therefore I must dress nicely while I'm before him, and all the while I'm representing him." So, after 25 years of being safely worshipped in Govindagarh, Govindadev was finally moved to a town called Rajgarh, where he stayed for 2 years. Because remember, the whole idea was to get him down to Amer, the capital of the Rajput kings at that time there. That was the whole idea, to get him safely there. So he stayed in Rajgarh for 2 years, from 1700 to 1702, to be exact. And from a document I found in the Institute, I saw that his pujaris, Govindaji's pujaris, they felt uneasy for his security there. It doesn't mention why, but so they wrote a letter to Jai Singh II requesting help. So Jai Singh II had Govindaji shifted to yet another village called Kava in late 1702. And by this time, Emperor Aurangzeb had become much, much older, more reclusive. You know, his attacks on temples and deities and his looting of Hindu towns and villages, it was all falling apart. And then finally, in the year 1707, he died. Aurangzeb died, which caused a huge celebration amongst the Hindu population in his vast empire. And it's quite a description, actually, of these celebrations at that time in history. And while I was reading about all the festivities, I won't go into the details here, but you can imagine. While I was reading them, I was reminded of one verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, 9th chapter, verse 14. Quote, "My dear Lord Nrisimhadev, please, therefore," this is Prahlad speaking, "cease your anger now that my father, the great demon Hiranyakashipu, has been killed. Since even saintly persons take pleasure in the killing of a scorpion or a snake, all the worlds have achieved great satisfaction because of the death of this demon. Now they are confident of their happiness, and they will always remember your auspicious incarnation of Nrisimhadev in order to be freed from fear," unquote. Sri Prahlad Maharaj ki. Similar, everyone was celebrating when the Asura is killed or dies. And indeed, taking full advantage of Aurangzeb's death, Jai Singh II had a beautiful temple constructed for Govindaji closer to Amar, his capital, in a village called Urupaheda. I was reading that Govindaji was taken there in a big procession. And when he arrived, Jai Singh personally gave hundreds of gold coins to Govindadev. And he actually renamed that village Govindapur. And he also donated a nearby village. It was called Jujharapur to Govindaji, again, stating that all the revenue from that village would be used in Govindaji's service. So, that's as far as we'll go today. Leave a couple more towns before the conclusion. But the danger's much decreased now, and for Govindaji. And we've just been introduced to Jai Singh II, but as I said earlier, he's actually a great devotee. He was a full-on Krishna Bhakta, full-on. I read in one document in the Institute, it was written by a court poet of Jai Singh. He wrote as follows, quote, "Shivhaya Jai Singh was the Bhagirath of Kali Yuga. Like Bhagirath brought Ganga and Dharma to the earth planet, similarly, Shivhaya Jai Singh II brought the flow of Dharma again to the earth after the evil deeds of Aurangzeb." He wrote like that. And a biographer of his time, or someone who wrote his biography, his name was Atma Rama. He wrote a nice biography about Jai Singh II. And I was reading the biography. And he wrote that when Jai Singh was in Vrindavan on one occasion, actually putting down a rebellion by the Juts, remember I mentioned they're fiercely independent people. For whatever reason, they had a rebellion. So he came to Vrindavan, Jai Singh with part of his army, and he put down that rebellion. And then what did he do? He bathed in Radhakund on the full moon of Kartik. We know that's a special day. He bathed in Radhakund on the full moon of Kartik. And during the month of Shravan, in 1724, he performed the marriage of his daughter on Janmashtami in Mathura. He could have done it, you know, in Rajasthan, but he brought her to Mathura, Krishna's Janmabhumi, where he appeared. And on that special day of Janmashtami, he had her married there in Mathura. And after the ceremony, he went on pilgrimage for several weeks of all the 12 forests of Vrindavan as a humble pilgrim. And then when he came back to Mathura, he founded a number of religious establishments, it's written, as well as he celebrated Holi in Mathura, Krishna Bhakta. And in 1727, he again visited Vrindavan, and he offered his weight in gold at Vishramghat. Vishramghat's, we've discussed Vishramghat before, very sacred place in Sri Vrindavan Dham. So he went there and they weighed the scale. He sat on one side of the scale and they put gold on the other side. And he gave that to the sacred places of Vrindavan to preserve them and also to take care of the sadhus. And at that time he also ordered the construction of many ghats along the sacred Jamuna River. And then it was in 1732 he had a temple built for Sita Devi and Lord Brahma at Vishramghat. And 4 years later, in 1736, he had another very beautiful temple constructed at Govardhan Hill for, he said, this is for Govardhan Nath, the Lord of Govardhan, Sri Krishna, the lifter of Govardhan Hill. If only we had such rulers today. And in that regard, I'll finish with a purport of Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam 6:27, Prabhupada writes, "The king, or in modern times, the government, should act as the guardian of the citizens by teaching them the proper goal of life. The human form of life is especially meant for realization of oneself and one's relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because this cannot be realized in animal life. The duty of the government, therefore, is to take charge of training all the citizens in such a way that by a gradual process they will be elevated to the spiritual platform and will realize the self and his relationship with God. This principle was followed by great kings like Maharaj Yudhishthir, Maharaj Parikshit, Lord Ramachandra, Maharaj Ambarish, and Prahlad Maharaj," unquote. And we can add, in more recent times, Raj Jai Singh the II. So now he's another one of our heroes. So, dear Prabhupada, we'll be back with one last lecture about Govindaji. As he enters his permanent residence in the city of victory, Jaipur, built by Arjai Singh the II. We'll be back for that pastime as well, this beloved deity of Sri Rupa Goswami. So thank you so much. See you in a couple of days. Shishi Gorni Thai Ki, Shishi Krishna Balaram Ki, Shishi Radha Shama Sundar Ki, Vrindavaneshwari Shimati Radharani Ki, Shishi Radha Govinda Deva Ki, Shri Rupa Goswami Prabhupada Ki, Shri Ram Singh Ki, Shri Jai Singh the II Ki, Shri Ram Goswami Ki, and our beloved Shri Prabhupada Ki, Go Premanandi, Jai Jai Sisi Radhe.